102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. We're live at Barlines at the Omni Nashville Hotel. A little Bon Jovi, or was it Joe's history teacher? Who knows? We're excited to have Drew Maddox join us now here on the program. We'll try and get him where he can hear. You hear? Is it working?
Talk amongst yourselves. How are we doing?
I got you now.
There we go.
I got you.
Okay,
got you.
Cool. All right. Whew. There we go. Little Drew, how are you?
What's up, guys? I am doing great. Best week of the year for me.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, for a hoops junkie, does it get any better than the opening week of March Madness? It absolutely does not. We just came off an unbelievable SEC tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Vanderbilt made a great run, which we loved. Selection Sunday. And then we roll right into incredible first couple of rounds of the tournament.
Do you like the draw for the Commodores?
I do. I do believe, and I think seeding gets overrated, and I can tell you my theory on all of that. But if you do look at analytics, I do believe Vanderbilt got the worst seeding of what their resume was. And that's not just looking through gold-colored glasses. If you look at offense efficiency, you look at defensive efficiency, you look at KenPom ratings, overlay it with strength of schedule, with what their resume was collectively, I do believe they received at least one seed line below of what their actual resume said they were.
So you think they could have been a four?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And then, now, if they win against Arkansas and Bridgestone on Sunday, does that change? I don't know. But I still like, I mean, I think the McNeese State game, in my opinion, is going to be a tougher game
than if
they draw Nebraska in round two, which we all know Nebraska's never won a tournament game in the history of the school. So we'll see if they can win their first round game as well.
I don't think Troy's an easy match.
No, I think it's going to be awfully difficult. Once again, they've never been in that setting.
Yeah.
Their offensive, once again, I don't want to get overly nerdy here, but if you start to really look at the way Nebraska finished the year, obviously we know, you know, Fred Hoiberg and what he has done, and he's known as an offensive guy. But if you look at this team, it's more of a defensive-minded group, and they're in the top of the analytics defensively. Offensively, they really struggled coming down the stretch, particularly in the Big Ten. I mean, it's a hard, obviously, schedule to play there in the Big Ten, but they really struggled scoring the basketball, and I just believe it's going to be awfully tough for them against Troy with athleticism and length and some of the things that they present. And then you got Vanderbilt if you get it to the next round.
Yeah.
What I hated was they unveiled the bracket the other night, and then the next graphic was like, who is the five that gets upset by the 12.
Yeah.
And immediately, I'm like, there's Vanderbilt and McNeese State and the other teams. And I'm thinking, that's all your Vandy players are going to hear this week, right?
Right.
I mean, like, that always happens. How do you shut that out?
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely turn off all media. I would grab every phone
right?
from every single guy in the locker room and put them in a lockbox over the next week and say, hey, we have a chance to do something really special. But to your point, Big Joe, I do believe you can't just go and compare – history to what modern day basketball and filling out a bracket looks like.
Right.
So I'll give you, for instance, last year, every bracket that was filled out on any platform, there were 11 teams that were picked 11 to 16 seeds as upset by the population, by people that actually picked. This year so far, only two. Two are showing up in a third of the brackets in terms of upsets.
Wow.
So what I mean by that is, it's exactly what we believe to be true. The gap is widening in college basketball. Good is getting better.
Yep.
And the gap, because of transfer and NIL money and allocation of resources and all the things. So I wouldn't be so quick just to historically go and say, oh, a 12's got to win. Or, you know, we know the last, you know, 9 of the 10 years, a 13's won. I don't think you can go to that metric anymore like we would have done 3 or 4 years ago.
The job Byington's doing at Vandy. I mean, look, he didn't have half a roster a year ago, and now to get where he is, your thoughts on him?
Oh, incredible. I love Mark Byington. I've known Mark Byington going back till 2010. Kid named Jake Allsmiller, who played for me at Christ Pres Academy, a young coach named Mark Byington from Georgia Southern, showed up in my office at Christ Pres Academy here south of Nashville. And I got to know him really well.
Oh, I'm familiar with CPA. Don't worry.
Okay.
FRA guy.
Yeah, that's right. So I got to know Mark really well, and I started really following what he was doing, obviously, and then to James Madison in here. incredible basketball coach, even better human being. But I do believe he is a great example of somebody that has embraced modern-day basketball but has not sold out completely to not implementing what traditional coaching can be, which is a transformative opportunity for the kids that you serve. Utilizing basketball as a platform to create a shared experience that is meaningful for the guys in the room. And he hasn't thrown that out the window to make it totally transactional.
Right. Yeah.
And I just think it's a beautiful example that you can do modern day basketball the way, embrace what the world is, but you can embrace traditional coaching values and the meaning of what it means to be a coach. He and his coaching staff, I believe, have done it as good as anybody in the country.
What does it mean to you as somebody that, you know, played at Vanderbilt, you know what the athletic department used to look like?
Yeah.
You see it now where there's commitments to the football coach and the football program, to the men's basketball program, the women's basketball program, baseball, bowling, whatever,
yeah,
that quite frankly wasn't there,
yes,
before. And now you are seeing the fruits of that labor and you know, Candace and what they're all doing. I mean, that has to be extra special for you as an alum to see that evolution of athletics at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it's everything to us, and it's beyond our wildest imagination. And I believe this. You know, I believe everything rises and falls with leadership.
Yeah.
And I give Chancellor Dienemeyer a lot of credit. I give, yeah, Candace Story Lee a lot of credit. But just what they've done with our coaches and the opportunity of the Vanderbilt value proposition of being in this city at this moment in time, being as a part of the SEC, and then utilizing your resources. I mean, guys, Vanderbilt, if you look at endowment levels, Vanderbilt right now would be third in the SEC behind the two Texas schools. Texas A&M and Texas would be the only two schools in SEC that has more collective resources than what Vanderbilt has.
Yeah.
So to your point, Chase, to see our leadership say, we want to be excellent in this space, just like we do in the medical space or the engineering space or the arts and science space, whatever that looks like, this is a programmatic offering that is an incredible connector in the community. We're going to put all of our chips to the middle of the table and say, we're going all in here because we want to be excellent at everything that we do. So to us that have been lifelong Vanderbilt fans, once again, my dad, my granddad played, yep, there. People told long time bedtime stories of other people that were meaningful in history. My dad told stories of Vanderbilt athletes. That's what we went to bed at night doing. So we have eat, breathe, and soaked up Vanderbilt athletics. And so to see what it has become and what is happening, and I believe we're just getting started. I believe the best is yet to come.
So I grew up here, and, I mean, before the Titans and the Preds and everything, I mean, it was Vanderbilt and the Sounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what I grew up going to.
Yeah.
Seeing a guy named Drew Maddox play for
– long time ago.
Jan Van Bredekamp.
That's right. Yeah. That's good.
Yep. And my buddy and I would go – his stepdad worked like the scores table, so we would always go
that's
to
awesome.
The games and watch you guys. But, I mean, that's what I grew up on. And so – I've always been a Vanderbilt fan, and now to see that success,
yes,
and, you know, and obviously Coach Corbin got a lot going with baseball a long time ago, but
yep,
to see it now spread throughout has been really neat.
Yeah, and I think Coach Corbin probably was the one that really started to foster,
yeah,
the flame of what could be, right?
Yeah.
So it started,
yeah,
to paint a picture. So a great deal of credit to him and the excellence that he built, because it was like, we can do that.
Right.
That can be done. He has obviously developed a blueprint for the Vanderbilt experience, the way a student athlete can operate within that environment, and we can do that within the conference that is the best conference in the world, and we can do it. And so I give him a lot of credit, because I do believe that helped attract, you know, Shea Ralph and obviously,
yeah,
what Clark Lee's done. He was a Vanderbilt guy, and I love that y'all are having him on later.
Yeah.
What,
yeah,
is there anybody better than that guy? I mean,
oh,
just,
yeah,
incredible. But Mark Byington as well, and then the other coaches that you said. I mean, it's just so cool to see the collective success across the board.
Obviously, you don't remember a Rod Dauhauer, because that started it going right there.
Yeah,
God,
so
sorry.
Yeah.
I am so sorry. I want to bring up, and I don't know why I remember this.
Yep.
1995, you played your ass off in the tournament versus Arkansas.
Yeah.
You lost by a point.
Yeah.
And I remember after the game, you sat on the floor.
Yep.
You were exhausted.
Exhausted.
I think you played 40 minutes.
I think I played every minute. Didn't come out that
I
game.
Think you,
yep,
did. And you were exhausted. And I just remember seeing, like, you gave everything,
yeah,
against the team that went to the championship,
yep,
game in 95.
Yep.
What do you remember about that? Was your freshman year,
yep,
right? And basketball's evolved in 30 years. But I just remember, Drew, that day how you kept that Vanderbilt basketball team. I mean, face it, Arkansas was loaded.
Yes.
Top to bottom, and you kept them, and y'all lost by 1 point.
Yeah, it was unlike anything that I had ever imagined I would ever get to experience, to be honest with you, Joe. You know, and that day was in the old Georgia Dome. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking into the Georgia Dome. We had played LSU the day before, and I always dreamed about playing an SEC tournament. Had a great game against LSU as well. And then coming back, Arkansas was ranked number one in America. And everybody in the audience, it was almost like it was blue and maroon red. I mean, like the support. Now, we saw this last weekend where some Arkansas fans started to show back up. But back in those days, it was like those were the two colors that you saw.
Right.
30,000 people in the gym. And the belief that we could win, we were playing for our lives. We had a up and down year that year. And so it was like almost what you saw from Ole Miss this last weekend. Like,
yeah.
If we lost, we were going to spring break. You know, and so it was like, this is everything you had waited for. You had always wanted to put yourself in a Vanderbilt uniform in that environment. You have nothing to lose. Just let it rip and go give everything that you had. And I love that you bring that up because we lost on a block charge call. Ronnie McMahon, my good friend, tried to slide over in front of Corey Beck, their point guard.
Right.
And it could have gone either way, and they called a block, and he made one free throw and beat us that day.
I vividly remember
that's
that,
amazing.
Man. I just vividly remember you sitting on the floor. You were exhausted.
Yeah, I scored our last I don't mean this way, but I scored our last 6 points and tipped one in over Dwight Stewart to even give us a chance that tied the game with under 20 seconds to go that day.
Oh, that is amazing. You make it in 98, right? Oh, yeah. You get to the tournament?
97. Yep.
And you play, was it
in Detroit?
In Detroit, yeah.
Yeah. The old palace in Auburn Hills.
Xavier,
that's right.
Well,
yes.
What was it like to see Vandy on the screen? Like, all right, Vandy's in, and then boom, there's your next part of your dream.
Yeah, it was, once again, it was incredible. We were sitting in the living room of Jan Van Bredekhoff. We were squarely on the bubble. Didn't know that we were going to get in. We had come down the stretch and closed that season and played well. Played good in the SEC tournament. Had some wins there in Memphis at the old Pyramid. And I still will remember, like, the elation of when our name popped up on that screen.
Yeah.
You know, it was like we had sacrificed. We had dreamed. We had spoken about it. We had planned. And then to see your name come up, it is just a reminder that anything's possible. Once
right.
you start to put your mind to it, the vision can become a reality, and I got to experience it that day.
What was the greatest team you ever faced?
The greatest team? I mean, 96 Kentucky Wildcats. Unquestioned.
Yeah.
I mean, probably, arguably to me, and I'm a basketball historian. I followed it, I mean,
yeah.
pretty closely. I would say they would be in the top two or three all time. I mean, of any college, all the UCLA teams, all the Duke teams.
Wow.
If you take the 96 Kentucky Wildcats led by Rick Pitino, we've seen what he's doing now
yeah.
at St. John's. I don't know that there was a more dominant college basketball team than what we saw from the Kentucky Wildcats in 96.
Who was the big man on that team?
Well, Mark Pope was one.
Right.
But they had Walter McCarty, who went on to play in the NBA. But you know, they had other guys. Ron Mercer, my good buddy, played for them as well.
Tony Delk.
Tony Delk, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah.
They were just loaded at every position. I believe – I don't want to speak out of turn. It was either 7 or 8 draft picks off that team.
Oh, my goodness. Real quick before we go to the break.
Yep.
Is Rick Pitino the greatest college basketball coach of all time?
Yeah, it would be tough not to argue that when you see what he's done. I still go Coach K just because I'm a little bit biased in that direction. But to be able to do it at so many stops, it takes somebody that is one of one, and I believe that's him.
According to sportsreference.com, Tony Delk, Antoine Walker, Walter McCarty, Derek Anderson, Ron Mercer, Mark Pope, Jeff Shepard, Wayne Turner, and Nazar Muhammad all played in the NBA.
Unbelievable.
Now, from the 96 team.
With NIL, does that team exist today?
Oh, that's a great question, because with the transfer portal, more importantly,
yeah.
too, because it would be hard to get that many guys to sell out to a vision of, are you okay if you average 11 points?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you may lose dollars and cents based on what your production is. You have to buy into that. You know, who knows? Kentucky did pay $22 million for this roster, so,
yeah.
you know, who knows?
That's a
What's
really,
that roster worth?
Oh, gosh.
50?
Yeah.
$5 million?
Yeah, right?
That's a really good question. We'll have more with Drew Maddox coming up next, talking some hoops with him live from the Omni Nashville Hotel, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. It's a Bon Jovi kind of day. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Hanging out with Drew Maddox, talking some hoops with him. Just looking at the tournament as a whole, is there a team, you know, I think the betting favorite is either Michigan or Duke, one of those teams. But is there a team you look at and just go, that is complete top to bottom and going to be really hard to beat?
Yeah, I think the top two, to answer your question, Chase, would be Duke and Arizona. Duke, I think a little bit, though, is suffering from some injuries. The starting point guard, now they have Boozer that can come in, the smaller of the Boozer twins, to fill in. But Caleb Foster being hurt, I think, will hurt them a little bit. The big fella inside, and I don't even want to attempt to say his last name, but suffers from some foot soreness. But I think them and Arizona are the two. Michigan, great defensive team. I think, you know, we saw it against Purdue the other day, really struggled to score coming down the stretch. So it'll be interesting. But I think those two teams in particular seem to have the guard play, the length, the size, and all that you would need.
A guy named Boozer at Duke.
Gosh,
I haven't heard that one before.
I know. What about that? Incredible what those kids, and if you go back and look at their lifetime in basketball, they have won everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, multiple state championships, won a national championship, not even playing for a prep school, won at the Peach Jam, Nike's highest level competition, and now here they are, you know, have the number one ranked team in America, and it's because of, obviously, what those kids can do.
Florida's a one seed. Are people sleeping on them, though?
I think they probably got a little bit of an inflated look after what Vanderbilt did to them this last week. Vanderbilt played the best game that they had played all year, making no mistake about it. But I do believe they struggled the day before against Kentucky. Kentucky just couldn't make a shot.
Yeah.
If Kentucky could have made a shot from behind the arc, they would have, that game would have been in the balance as well. Vanderbilt's backcourt is just unique. I think Duke Miles and Ty Tanner, obviously a local product here at Brentwood Academy, but those two kids, the way that Florida with their length, I think Vanderbilt is a hard, hard matchup. So if we're looking at that rematch in the Sweet 16, I think that's going to be a fun game.
I know Calipari in 12, when Vandy beat them in New Orleans SEC tournament, he said that loss propelled them to the finals and win the championship because they got the taste that losing sucks. And he kept telling them, losing sucks. And they experienced Anthony Davis. They hated that, and they got the run. So could Florida fuel off that?
I think so. I mean, I do. And I think Todd Golden's an outstanding basketball coach.
Agreed.
Now, I've never seen a coach that rips officials as much as that guy. I mean, I sat behind their bench, you know, every game they played over here. He was relentless on those officials. It was incredible. All that to say, I think he's a brilliant basketball coach. I do believe their length is unique. If their guards can give them just enough, I think you're looking at a Final Four team for sure.
Darius Acuff Jr.'s uncle is Rashad Phillips.
Oh, wow. Okay. Who played at North Carolina?
And he's 5'9". I didn't know he's 5'9".
Wow.
But he's like his advisor, and he played 10 years in the NBA.
Acuff is as good of a guard as I've seen in person in probably the last 20 years for certain.
And he's got the cutoff T-shirt underneath, which is bad.
You're a bad man if you can pull that off. That's what we used to do. We used to get those scissors out and cut those sleeves off.
Yeah, right. Calipari, I mean, look, Kentucky fans are telling us, oh, we're glad to let him go. We didn't need him. But, I mean, he did something nobody's ever done. He's won the tournament twice with two different teams. And I get the, you know, sometimes you're like, I can't stand that guy, but guy wins, right?
Yes. And if you saw this team, they won playing basically seven players. And they didn't go any further than that. He got production from all over the board. I thought he made great adjustments. Even coming out of halftime, what he did against Vanderbilt, they went on a quick 11-0 run.
Yeah.
The way they ended the game on a 13-2 run coming out of the last media timeout, he just seemed to make the right call at the right time. And then, obviously, you put the ball – it doesn't take somebody that's extremely – smart to put the ball in the hands of Acuff to let him go make a play, but you still got to set the table and space the floor and counter action it and do all the things that they do. He did a great job.
So if you don't have good guard play in the tournament, you're not going to win, are you?
That's correct.
Right?
That's
If Tanner, who's number two for Vandy?
Oh, Duke Miles.
Love that
beast.
Dude.
Oh,
right.
He's a dog.
And they missed him. When he was hurt, missed him.
Well, and that's when Vanderbilt went through a little bit of a struggle. And then when he was still trying to get acclimated back and get back healthy,
right.
That's when Tennessee won here in Nashville against Vanderbilt. That was his first game back. And now you start to see the efficiency. But those two guards together against Florida forever – Vanderbilt only had two turnovers. It was like 18 assists and two turnovers. And down the end of the game, they turned it over a little bit. But those two guards, you're always going to have a chance.
I always hate doing this, but I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Can you stay one more segment?
Okay, yeah.
I can do it.
Yes.
All right, because we're running up against it. Because I got a few more questions I want to ask you about the tournament.
I love it.
Drew Maddux is with us here on the Chase and Big Joe Show. We'll have more in hour number two, 102.5 The Game.
Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines and continuing talking some hoops with Drew Maddox, who's been nice enough to hang out with us, because there's a few more things that I wanted to ask you,
yeah,
including TSU, Nolan Smith. He gets there in basically in August and meets his team, and now he wins the OVC the first time since 1994, gets his team to the tournament, yeah, to take on Iowa State. I mean, that is just a tremendous turnaround.
Yeah, incredible. And I had the blessing this year of doing maybe 7 or 8 games for them.
Oh, cool.
And so I got to know him really well, first of all. Incredible coach. I mean, I don't know how long. I love Mickey Allen that he did, yeah, there, but get ready. I don't know how long you're, yeah, going to have him, and it could be as quick as this year, because he almost did too good of a job.
Yeah.
But what he did with Harper and Nkrumah, and I don't know if you saw that team play, but
yeah,
really, really good. And the way that he systematically created more of an offensive philosophy there, and the way that they played, it was a tough proposition for teams to play against. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really cool.
I'm buying
to see
stock
them
all day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
100%.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a fluke at all. Tonight, NC State and Texas will be one of the first 4 games. It's the second one. You got Howard, UMBC first, and then NC State, Texas. Sean Miller with the Longhorns in the Nashville zone. Will Wade with, yep, NC State in his first year. I think this could be one of the best games of the whole tournament.
I think so, too. I think these two teams are evenly matched. And you start to think about those two coaches in particular. If you remember a couple of years ago, both of those guys,
yep,
were a part of that whole FBI wiretap.
Yep.
All. So it's really amazing to see them kind of their journey back to this place.
Wow, yeah.
You know, didn't think about it till you just said it,
yeah,
up, Chase. It,
yep,
just hit me. I was like, oh, my gosh, both of those guys could have been out of college basketball and then worked their way back in. But those two teams are really, really good. I was not overly impressed with Texas when I saw them live and in person here last week. I just believe NC State, the way that Will Wade almost junks the game up a little bit. He's going to throw different defenses. He's going to camouflage his own look into man look. He's going to keep you uncomfortable. And now we even see McNeese State play that way as well. So I believe NC State wins in a very, very close one. And, oh, by the way, before, Joe, you ask a question.
Yes, sir.
I coach 4th and 7th grade basketball here in Nashville.
Yep.
And we have some faithful listeners to y'all's show.
Oh,
every,
okay,
single day.
Good.
So I just wanted to give them a shout-out. They're listening right now to us. Mark Darden, Chad Spencer, the 4th grade and 7th grade Team Nike Select. Thank you, parents,
yes,
for listening to Big Joe and Chase.
Yeah. Do you, awesome, make them run after a loss?
I do. Like, we don't even – we like, put back on your shoes. When we get off the bus, we're going back to the line.
Okay. Do you spend a lot of time on free throws? Because when I watch basketball today,
yes,
and this is because Coach Glenn Tackett at FRA – beat this into me of they're called free throws for a reason. And if he's listening right now, he's laughing because he knows
it.
It's true. I remember a practice where we lost the game, and he spent the whole practice making them run and shoot free throws, and we didn't get to leave until everybody made,
yeah,
their free throws. So I hope that's still something we're teaching.
No doubt. If you came to one of my practices, even with our little 4th grade, if there's not a number that is hit, everybody gets their basketball. They get to the line. We run for accountability, and we go back, keep shooting free throws until the mark is made, even,
yeah,
if as 4th grade little boys. It's part of what we do.
Oh, I love it.
Oh,
free
I
throws.
Love that.
You have to be able to make free throws.
Yes.
You have to be able to make free throws.
I think one of the greatest disciplinary actions ever taken was Tom Penders at Texas had a rule you had to go to class.
Yep.
One day a guy did not go to class. So the next morning at 5, everybody gathered to run.
Yes.
So the guy that missed a class, he made him go sit in the stands. And
watch him.
Watch him run,
right?
Buddy. Yeah. Nobody missed a class.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that is brilliant.
Because, yes,
you're so mad at that guy, then the guy who did that sees what you've done to,
yes,
your teammates.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, that is the greatest punishment I've ever heard.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we used to do, Big Joe, going back when I was at CPA, is I would have a countdown clock. If we started practice at 6 a.m. in the morning or whatever it was, you know, you'd have the clock that would back up to 6 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, if not every player was there, we would have a coach that would set the clock the other direction. And so for every single minute late was a consequence run for everybody else except,
oh,
the guy that was late.
Oh.
And he would watch, but there was also a double side to it. He also got what was coming to him after practice as well.
Oh, nice.
So he would watch and make sure he saw what he collectively had done to the rest of the group. But, oh, by the way, he got his consequence after practice.
I want to ask you, Cooper Flagg, right? The guy from Duke, right? Great player and everything. He was at a Duke game like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he looked so depressed. And maybe I saw things differently. When you go from that excitement of the tournament at Duke and all that and what's going on right now, then you go to the NBA, and it's just he looked sad, Drew. And he probably wasn't. But I'm thinking, you go from this amazing high, and I get your lottery draft choice and all that, but then you got to be missing this, right?
For sure. I mean, I don't think that even if you ask any of those college guys, even if they're one and done, like in that case, Cooper Flagg was there. You know, he was probably on Duke's campus for a couple of months. He wasn't even there a whole year. But what they got to taste there and what they got to feel and experience, and you play in a place like Cameron Indoor and you travel around and you see the spirit of the fan base, you're never going to capture that again. I don't care what level of basketball you play on again. Probably the next closest thing you would ever taste it with is if you're fortunate to play on the USA Olympic team or something like that, because I don't care if you play for the Mavericks, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Celtics, you're never going to have the spirit by which you represent a group of people like you do in college athletics.
Do you think NIL will, in basketball and college basketball, will keep guys long? Because I ask you, I grew up on 80s Big East basketball.
Yep.
Pat Ewing, Dwayne at Syracuse, the guard, Pearl.
Dwayne Pearl.
All these guys, Ronnie Cicely.
Oh.
They all stayed, right? They all stayed 4 years, and you loved it.
Yeah.
And now these guys are one and done.
Yeah.
Can the NIL bring back 3-4 year guys?
I mean, I think we're starting to see if that theory would prove itself out. I mean, not right now. You got players that are making the level of money that they're making. Take AJ Diabanta at BYU. I mean, what he signed for this year, I mean, reportedly over $5 million.
Right, yeah.
You know, and if that can't keep – he's going to be the number one pick in the draft, at least number two. Can that be enough motivation to keep him in? I don't know. But I think, to your point, Joe, you would start to see it a little bit. But I do think it's awfully sad just the transient nature that this has created. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day. Will we ever see somebody go into a school's Hall of Fame? Will we ever see records broken?
That's a great point.
You know, will we ever see records broken at these places? Will you see, you know, just the longevity and the connection to a fan base? It just gets thrown out the window with this. I mean, even for Vanderbilt, I mean, some of those players are on their third team, much less their second team.
Yeah.
You know, you get to know these kids, the human element, their stories, the things that we fall in love with gets thrown out the window.
You don't fault guys.
Absolutely not.
For leaving, right? For an opportunity. I mean, people are like, you should just tough it out and be stronger, be better. I don't fault them.
No, because once again, their earning capacity in their lifetime will never surpass this moment in time in their lives.
Right.
And I mean, you have to think, 98% will never touch professional basketball.
Yeah.
So I don't care how good you are in college basketball. Players we saw play in the SEC tournament, you're like, oh, that's a dude. That's a dog. They're never going to make it to the professional ranks. And so you cannot fault somebody if they have a good year and somebody's willing to pay them $1 million, $1.2 million, $1.3 million, they're going to go back and sell med devices, or if they're lucky, or do they get a degree and all those things. So, no, you absolutely cannot fault somebody for trying to leverage up and make their situation better.
Yeah, no. I just – when you look at it in the old ways of you could go to the league right out of high school, or you do the one and done now. Like, what is a better system, or do they both have their pros and cons?
Yeah, they both have their pros and cons for sure. But I still think, and I know Trump called, you know, a lot of people that are very powerful in sports to the White House, 2-3 weeks ago, whatever it was. We've got to figure out a way to regulate this system.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to either be player unions, there has to be salary caps, there has to be regulations, there has to be contracts. But this era that we're in, that it totally feels like it's loose and there are no boundaries and there are no standards that we're being measured by, I think it does set up a disproportionate system in sports.
When Andy Kennedy rips his team for not making layups and he says, you guys are making more money than anybody in the arena.
Yeah.
And I just seen him, Drew, that day after the game when he spoke. I mean, he was mad.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
he's got a right to be mad.
Yeah, and even, you know, and we love Rick Barnes. I love Rick Barnes. And he would even bring that into the press conference now.
Yeah.
Like, you're making enough money not to turn the basketball over or whatever it was. And so to your point, it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you do, but I do believe it needs to honestly come from on top. Systematic, holistic change. And what is the system? And let's start to measure everybody by the same set of rules.
And I think, too, you know, you need to come up with a calendar. And obviously it would be different for different sports.
Yes.
But, you know, the Lane Kiffin situation in football where he's leaving his team to go to LSU before the season is over. Like, that shouldn't be. And
right.
I get if you feel like you can better your life and family by going elsewhere, then fine. But the calendar should be set just like the NFL, where there is a true off season.
That's right.
Where all of that stuff happens.
Agreed.
And you do that for football, basketball, you know, and so on.
I agree with that. I mean, because we saw John Summerall.
Yep.
You know, he coached Tulane. What was that situation like? They knew he was leaving.
Right.
And going to Florida.
And a bunch of his players are probably going to go with him.
Right.
You know?
So, you know, it's like this. It is this delicate thing. But I love what you're saying, Chase. I think there has to – use professional sports. If we're going to professionalize this thing,
yep.
Obviously there's a model that has worked with free agency and salary caps and luxury taxes and the rules of free agency and all the things. Let's just take the blueprint and let's develop what the collegiate system is going to look like.
I like what Bo Schembechler did in 89 when Bill Frieder took the San Diego State job at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And Bo fired him. And says, a Michigan man's going to coach my basketball team.
Steve Fisher's got it.
Right?
And it goes on to win it. Beat Seton Hall in the finals.
What a great game. By the way, Chase, you brought up going straight from high school to the college. I'm still mad because you remember where Kevin Garnett originally signed?
Yeah.
South Carolina.
Did he sign at South Carolina?
Well, that's where he was going to go.
Oh, wow.
South Carolina was the school he was going to go to, and then he's up good. So we missed a chance of seeing Kevin Garnett. That's what sucks.
Yes.
Right?
Agree.
Missing those guys who would have been in the college for a little bit.
Think about LeBron. Like if LeBron had played.
Can you imagine
Carolina?
Kobe
probably?
Bryant, where would Kobe have gone? You know, when he was Tracy McGrady was another one.
Yeah,
you know, Jermaine O'Neal was another one. He was a South Carolina guy.
That's right. Yeah.
So where would those guys have gone? You know, it would have been pretty cool. None
of those guys were Scott Drought. None of those guys.
I bet Scott Drought could have still outshoot them to this day.
With that perm,
that tight curl.
Absolutely, man.
Amazing.
Before you go, we talk all the time, Chase, about. When you played at Vandy, there were no Titans, Oilers, Preds. I mean, that Memorial Gym was the place.
Yeah, it was nuts. And I still tell that to my kids. Like, we'll go to a game. They're like, Dad, there's empty seats everywhere. I'm like, trust me, back then there was not.
Memorial Magic
zero was a thing.
Memorial Magic was real. And it's like I could walk in there and you could have an out-of-body experience. And we did many nights. And it was so special. And I tell people all the time the unifying force that gym was. I mean, it was a true gathering spot for the city of Nashville in those years.
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah. 15-6-2-6.
I think that's right.
I think that was.
Until they did the luxury boxes, then it went down to like 15-3-2-4.
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, what a time, man. You're the best, Drew.
I love it. Y'all are awesome. Thank y'all again for having me on. I would love to come back and talk NCAA tournament anytime you invite me.
We're going to make that
happen. The answer is yes. What's the question?
We got you next. Let's do this next week.
Okay. I love it.
Because I got good vibes that Vandy's going to get to the 16.
I love it. I love that.
He's
Drew
Maddox.
Thank you guys again.
And he will join us again. We'll have more coming from the Omni Nashville Hotel, including Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee at the top of the next hour here on 102.5 The Game.